Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Tuesday, March 10th, 2020. As we're about to dive into Monday Night Raw with Edge's return, the Monday Night Messiah, and his reign of terror continuing, AJ Styles' promo, Becky Lynch's promo, Drew McIntyre's promo, very promo-heavy show, and we're going to dive into all of that, of course, as we get through the show. And it was a very interesting show. I'm very, very confused about some of the things WWE did, and I'm going to get to those. I don't know if it's a good or bad thing. I guess maybe it's just not the way I would have booked it. So we're going to dive into that in just a minute. And you guessed it, it's the Edge segment that WWE built up to the entire night. And I don't know why that wasn't the main event. Probably because WWE didn't want the crowd completely asleep for that part of it, and they wanted the energy up to as high of an energy level as they could have hoped for in a 3-hour format. So that's going to be coming up, my thoughts on that in just a minute. But thank you guys for joining me and for making this show a success. And I say that all the time. That's true, though. So I don't think enough shows that are successful that really pay homage to the people that make it successful, and that's you guys. So thank you. And this is a show that drops 7 times a week. So this is the Tuesday show. Tomorrow is going to be a wrestling nostalgia show from the vault. And then on Thursday and Friday, AEW and NXT respectively will be dropping your way. And then on Sunday, it is back to the regularly scheduled programming of WWE Week in Review as I bring on Anthony DeMarco and we get to discuss all of the things happening. We get to talk about the upcoming WrestleMania card that is all but coming to focus now. And while there's still some loose ends to tie up, I think we have the card 75% set outside of the United States Championship, outside of the Intercontinental Championship, which we'll get more information on Friday, the tag team title belts, but all the major matches are locked in stone, set in stone, as they say, and WrestleMania 36 looks to be a pretty stacked card, very stacked card when you look at the star power on it. I don't know if The Rock's going to have any kind of role. We'll find out on Monday if Stone Cold Steve Austin's going to have any kind of role at WrestleMania. I would hope so, given the time of year, and that it's not just like a one-stop, hit-it-and-quit-it type of deal with Austin showing up. I mean, I know that he's been on the Raw 25th anniversary. He was at Raw Homecoming, and then he was at a random Raw to do a contract signing for a championship match. So I would assume that given WrestleMania would be only 3 weeks away at that point, that hopefully they will intervene, or hopefully they'll interject Stone Cold in some capacity at WrestleMania, and maybe in a referee capacity or whatever. I know that's a bit tired of a role for Austin, but it's always entertaining, and so we'll have to see. But certainly, at the very least, Monday night, you can expect in Pittsburgh somebody to get their ass whooped, somebody to get stunned, somebody to get drowned in beer. At least that's my hope. I mean, that's everyone's hope when they see Stone Cold. As good as he is on the mic, I want the old Stone Cold out there kicking ass and dropping people with stunners. I mean, that's just what made Austin Austin. So I don't want them to get cute with it. And maybe it leads into something of significance at WrestleMania 36. Also next Monday, we have The Undertaker making an appearance for a contract signing. The good old contract signings that just, those segments will not die in WWE. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why. Some matches need contracts, others don't. Some just need a verbal agreement. But it's just pomp and circumstance. It's a presentation. I understand that. But I feel as of late, WWE has really been exhausting and playing their contract signing creative card way, way, way too much. So if they could kind of back off of that, I know that it's just a, to some people, it's a beloved segment because they know that it's, you know, 95% chance going to end in chaos. We have seen some go peaceful, but the majority, the vast majority of these contract signings end in violence with somebody through a table. And, you know, it is enjoyable to some degree, but it's just a tired way to get to a match. So anyway, I'm looking forward to the match, though, with AJ and Undertaker more than I was when I went into the show. So I'll get to that in a minute as well. But one last thing, and then I'm going to jump into the Edge segment, is that if you want all the ads removed from here, you just head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast, and you get all of these shows ad-free. You get exclusive blogs. You also are going to get a shout-out on the show, and you're also going to get a possible video shout-out. And you can, depending on the tier, get on your own podcast with me here. Right? So you can come on and select the topic and we can discuss whatever you like. So, all right, well, let's jump into Edge. And then I've got a fan or listener comment that I'm going to plug into the show here. So, alrighty, well, so Edge comes out. It was being advertised all night that Edge was going to be returning, that Edge was going to come back and avenge his wife. And if you've been watching wrestling for any length of time, you probably figured out pretty quickly that's not going to happen, and that is something reserved for the pay-per-view. Whether it's WrestleMania or otherwise, it needs to be reserved for a pay-per-view event. That's called a business. That's called making people pay to see what they want. So, if you knew wrestling at all, you've been watching for even like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you probably knew you weren't going to get that, but you were excited to see what Edge was going to do, what his reaction was going to be. And about 3/4 of the way through the show, Edge finally shows up in his rental car and comes out with his hair cut and his beard cut a little bit. And he looked very focused. Edge is gifted with the eyes. Edge has eyes that can tell more than his actions can tell. And that certainly was the case this past Monday, because that's all we saw were Edge's eyes. He came on the mic and screamed for Randy. And that was him during a interruption of the MVP segment, where MVP said he could make Edge a star, and he's transitioning himself from an in-ring role to a managerial guidance type of role. And Edge just dismissed him, screamed for Randy, and then MVP starts getting on the nerves of Edge, saying, you know, how's your wife? Which sent him into a frenzy. And actually, rather than me describe it to you, if you haven't already heard this, well, let's relive it again, and I'll give you my comments on it.
Randy! I need you to grow a set and get your ass out of here right now! Hey, what's wrong with you, man? See, that's your problem. Your mental is off, Edge. Your mental is off. You're focusing on the wrong things. How is your wife?
So let's take a pause right there. We have Edge hit an RKO after he spears MVP, hit an RKO on Randy Orton, and then sit up and you know, do his little pulling of his hair thing, which is always just, I mean, I love it. I love it. And then takes his time. Anytime a babyface takes his time or her time, you know that that's not going to bode well for what they're actually trying to do. I mean, he wasted so much time instead of just running out to the ring and doing what he needs to do, pending possible security coming out or whatever. But he took too much time, which allowed Randy Orton to recover from the RKO and slither out of the ring. So let's take a listen to that.
Oh!
Wait a minute. Now caught up in the clutches of Edge. MVP paying for his words, for bringing up Edge's wife, Beth Phoenix. Look at the eyes of Edge.
I'm telling you, all Edge sees is Randy Orton.
And then poor MVP. Well, let's just take a listen. We know.
This is you, Randy.
Oh! Concerto! And again!
Not once, but twice. So Randy Orton looks on in a bit of a state of, for the first time in this entire program, a bit of concern on his face. And the stare down between Edge and Orton was good. It was a bit weird that he hit an RKO on Randy. I mean, I'm not complaining about that per se. They couldn't blow off the spear. Everybody wants to see Edge spear Randy and then slam his head into a chair a few times. I mean, and repay the favor. Everybody wants to see that. So you don't do that. So an RKO, it was a good substitute using his own move against him, but he gave Randy too much time. Randy slides out of the ring and MVP is just collateral damage. So it was a strong segment. It was a good segment, but I still left feeling a little bit cheated, and not in a way that I want to see Edge, you know, kick Randy's ass, because you do. I didn't feel cheated in that way. I actually felt that it was better to not have these two have any physical altercations whatsoever. Have every single week Randy find a way to either not be there, be there via satellite, have a sea of security around him, or just be able to continue to attack Edge from behind, and continue to build up the heat with Edge until you get to Mania and these two just, Edge just tears him limb from limb. That's how I would have booked this thing. They're going the Sami Zayn road with Braun Strowman. That seems to be that particular storyline over there is what they're telling and the story that I like. But that, you know, again, I felt cheated, not in that particular way. I guess in a way that I don't know why Edge did what he did to MVP. I know that you could chalk it up to frustration and he mentioned his wife, but MVP didn't do anything to him or his wife. And for Edge to just do what he did to MVP is a bit hypocritical, considering that Orton just did that to him for no reason. Edge essentially did that to MVP for no reason. And I know that doesn't really ruin anything for me. It's just a bit of a hole in the logic of this story and how I feel about the Edge character. Not in a negative light, just kind of like, that's not how I would have done it. But overall, I mean, it's been solid. I would have liked a little bit more of an explanation, maybe a little more kind of like screaming and a little bit more anticipation for Randy to come out and, you know, maybe say that he's been given the night off. That was always a good one. Or he has left the building, or he said his flight's delayed. I mean, there's a million ways to go with this. So I don't want to see these two lock up again until WrestleMania. I mean, again, I wouldn't have had anything happen until WrestleMania. I know some fans would have been like, I need to see it. Come on. We're waiting too long. That's the point. So I would have had a little bit more of an explanation from Edge, and we have 3 weeks to go. So there's certainly time for us to hear from Edge in a much more long form capacity and hear what his thoughts were, his emotions were, how he felt sitting at home watching Randy Orton RKO his wife, of which she actually kind of deserved considering she kicked and slapped him. So, I mean, what's he going to do? Sit and curl up in a ball, right? No. WWE likes to let you forget that. It's just that Randy Orton RKO'd Beth. Well, what did she do to him? That's left out. Anybody else notice that? That part is left out of the narrative of Beth getting RKO'd. They show it on video, but the announcers don't talk about it. They just say that what he did was despicable. Well, it's kind of self-defense. By definition of the law, it's self-defense, self-preservation. So Randy could always hide behind that, and honestly, I would have just had an unprovoked RKO if you really want true heat. But anyway, I mean, if these are the biggest things that I can nitpick, it's not the biggest things in the world. But I would like a little bit more of a medical update on Edge as well. I want to know what he felt with his neck, what the doctor said, you know, why was he out for almost 2 months? What was his wife there to originally say? I want more of a script from Edge. And I don't mean that in a pro wrestling, it's scripted way. I mean it in like a dialogue way. I want more of a context. I want more context and depth from Edge other than just vengeance and wanting to attack Randy. Because we'll all get that. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to Edge beating the holy hell out of Randy Orton. But I want more of a story being told by Edge of what he did for 7 weeks, what he thought when Randy did what he did to Beth, just the whole psychology behind it. And I hope that they fill that void in the next few weeks in the final run here to WrestleMania. I think they will. Edge has always been extremely solid on the mic. I expect great things from him and great things from Randy, but I don't want to see these two mix it up. I don't need a pull-apart brawl that is overdone. I mean, we saw it with Brock and Undertaker before WrestleMania 30. We've seen it now with Shayna Baszler and Becky Lynch. I don't need a pull-apart. We probably will get it the final week of Raw. That tends to be the go-home, you know, go-to, if you will, is a pull-apart brawl where it's a stalemate and, you know, the crowd chants, let them fight, let them fight. It's just a staple, it seems, of go-home shows. So we might get that part of the story in terms of the physical part of the story, but I hope we don't get any more physicality until WrestleMania. The last thing I'll say about this is going forward to WrestleMania, I'm really, really hoping that WWE doesn't do what they did with Randy Orton, Triple H at WrestleMania. I believe it was WrestleMania 25 in Houston, where Randy Orton attacked Stephanie. He ended up giving her a kiss, handcuffing Triple H to the ring apron, making him watch it, attacking him at his home. Triple H attacking Randy at his home, and they ended up doing that match as a straight up wrestling match, and that was a huge mistake in my mind. I never understood it then. I still don't understand it now. And the whole story behind that was that Triple H said, or Randy said, that if Triple H loses the championship, the stipulation was added, if he gets disqualified, he loses the championship, as Triple H was holding the belt at the time. And that, you know, he would lose the belt. So I didn't understand that limitation. WrestleMania is not for that. WrestleMania is for giving us the best match you can, blowing off stories. And that made no sense to me, considering the volatility of that personal rivalry. It just, why would you handicap yourself for the psychology of trying to get fans to hope Triple H controls his temper when no one in their right mind would? I hope they don't go that road. I hope it's a, I don't know if it's a steel cage match. This one is deserving of a sell, like outside of the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. It's okay to do a Hell in a Cell match, and maybe Edge proposes that. Or possibly, think about this. What if Edge proposes a First Blood match? I mean, maybe, right? And it's possible maybe down the line, as I'm kind of talking myself now out of it. And the only reason is, at WrestleMania, you want to see Edge hit the spear. You want to see him pin Randy Orton. So maybe there is blood in the match, but maybe not a First Blood match per se. But I do need to see this be a physical, violent match, as it should be. I don't need them handicapping themselves into, if you get disqualified, you're fired or something silly like that. But anyway, I'd give this segment a B-. Dropping from an A plus at times from with Randy Orton over the last 7 weeks to a B minus. It is a fall. It is a step down. It's just not how I would have booked it. Okay, moving on to the next segment here. And to me, the next biggest segment that occurred on Raw, and this is arguable, but the AJ Styles promo that he cut on The Undertaker. And a lot of people feel mixed out there. I do too. I certainly do. I understand what they're trying to go for. I get it. I understand that this is something that AJ needed to do to make us interested, halfway interested in this match, because when he announced that he's challenging Undertaker to a one-on-one match at WrestleMania, I mean, listen to the crowd. It's just almost not there. It's really almost not there. AJ comes out and talked about how the Undertaker has stolen moments from him. He stole the trophy, of which that hasn't ever been talked about. Undertaker's never posed with it, never even took it, and completely dismissed it. I love it. I'm not complaining. But he talks about how, you know, Undertaker has taken from him, and the crowd was chanting Undertaker and trying to, you know, hope against hope that Undertaker was there in Washington, D.C. He talked about how he saw 3 years ago Undertaker lose to Roman Reigns and remove his clothing and lay it in the ring, exiting and holding his fist in the air, and that, you know, he then came back. And he doesn't know if it's the spotlight or the money that's driving him. But he doesn't see the mythical monster anymore. All he sees, and here's the money line, is the broken down old man named Mark Galloway. Which is actually Mark Calloway, by the way. Somebody on this report I'm reading spelled it wrong. Mark Calloway. And that Undertaker should have retired 10 years ago. And he doesn't know what keeps Undertaker coming back. And then attacks his wife because he says Undertaker does what his wife wants him to do. And that Styles asks Undertaker what he has to lose. He's already lost his dignity, pride, mystique. And then he calls him down a broken old man. And boy, this was probably one of AJ's best promos in a while. It certainly added a little bit more interest to me, at least from where we were at the Super Showdown, and then what happened at Elimination Chamber. Certainly, it's a much more interesting match now, even though we've seen Undertaker handily defeat AJ Styles not once but twice. They almost doubled down at Elimination Chamber, which I didn't like. You could also argue that Undertaker or AJ Styles attacking Undertaker's age and wife humanize him, right? It makes him a person. I don't want that for The Undertaker. I don't want Undertaker being a person. I want him being The Undertaker. And we're not in a protected kayfabe age anymore. We know that. We understand that. But I think Undertaker should be cared for in a more special way. I mean, I would... If I was going to write this promo, I'm fine with AJ calling him a broken down old man. I'm actually okay with that. To me, the real kicker was talking about his wife. Because how often, number one, is Undertaker's real name used? I don't know if it's ever been used on air. Mark Calloway. Number two, you bring up Undertaker's wife. When is the Undertaker's wife ever been mentioned on air ever in the history of his career? And he's had a couple of wives. We know this. Maybe during his American Badass run when he had the Sarah tattoo on his neck. And we remember, she was a really, really skinny blonde. I remember that. He likes the blondes. There's no question. Certainly a trend there. Good for him. But outside of that, in his dark dead man character, his wife has never been mentioned ever. Never. So to take those two parts of him and to expose them to the audience that we all know, it's not a secret. His real name's not a secret, nor is his wife's true identity a secret. I mean, for God's sakes, she's constantly posting on Instagram, you know, pictures of him and the kids and all that. And that's wonderful. But I do my best to keep the social media world and the professional wrestling world separate, because without it, I just crumble. I don't want to see the people in the ring that are competing that night, you know, having a drink and, you know, snapping a selfie together as they're doing, like, you know, duck faces and or whatever, silly stuff. I don't need to see the people that are, you know, faces and heels, you know, kissing each other or whatever else they're doing, right? I mean, especially the women who, I mean, there's just no respect for kayfabe anymore, right? And I'm so glad that the Attitude Era did not exist during the social media era. I mean, it just, it's a damn blessing that that never happened, because social media is just, it's the best and the worst, isn't it? It's the best and the worst, even in our own personal lives. We all bitch about social media and how it's the worst. I'm tired of seeing them post about this and that. And yet, what do? 5 minutes later, we're on our phone scrolling. You know I'm right. We know I'm right. Again, the more I talk, the more I really want to do a show on like personal opinions and thoughts and stories from my life. But just some people online, I mean, you would think that by now the social media etiquette would be well known about what to share, not what not to share, what to talk about, the attention seeking posts. Like, so you ever have the friend on Facebook post something cryptic but doesn't say what it is, like, I'm so upset, oh my God, I can't believe this, something to that effect, that just garners and invites and fishes for people to say, what's going on? Oh, it's so attention seeking. It's like, it's being an attention seeking whore is what it is. And that goes for men and women. I'm not saying whore to isolate a woman, right? I'm talking about in general, it's attention seeking people that just put up these statuses that are nothing more than to either spark a debate and try to show everyone how smart they are with whatever they're going to talk about, particularly some kind of political stance, or if it's just something that is attention seeking so that people respond and wonder what's wrong. Oh, what's going on? Oh, right. Or the constant posts about their significant other, about how wonderful they are. And oh my God, they're the best. They're my best friend, you know, BFF4L, like all this crap. What I've found is the people that are the happiest aren't the ones that don't have to try to justify to social media that they're happy. Right. So there's my mini rant on social media. I've never talked about social media in any capacity on this show, but that's a very small view and a very one out of many pet peeves that I have on social media. And by the way, on a side note, I'm on a bit of a side note type of a day. If you want to ever hate yourself, I mean, like, you ever want to just try to find a time machine to go back and punch yourself in the face, the motivation for that will be downloading the app called TimeHop. Some of you may have it. It's relatively popular. And what it does is just basically pull up memories from your social media accounts over the last however many years. Instagram, Twitter, your photo album, Facebook, and it pulls up your statuses you posted, pictures, and my God. I mean, some of the things I put up, just so stupid. And I'm no wonder. I mean, I'm getting like no likes, one like. I'm looking at it and I'm like, yeah, no wonder, you idiot. I mean, seriously, some of the stuff I put up, it's just flat out embarrassing, right? Some of the stuff is just embarrassing. Like, for example, I would, like, whatever, I don't know, whatever girlfriend I had 8, 9, 10 years ago. And I'd be like, oh, can't wait to see you later, baby. Like, who the F cares, right? Who gives a damn about your boyfriend or girlfriend that you can't wait to see, that you have to let the world know that you can't wait to see them, to let everyone know you have a boyfriend, girlfriend? No one cares, right? Nobody cares. So I put this stuff up like a fool. I don't know. I'm ranting about myself. That is the first self-induced rant ever in the history of the show. And so, I don't know. The more I talk, the more I really just want to just dive into some certain stuff that's not wrestling related. I love wrestling. Don't get me wrong. It's the passion in my life. But sometimes my personal stories, personal history, personal experience just overtake my brain. And that's what it's doing right now. So I need to refocus on wrestling, because that's the name of the show, is the WWE podcast, not Matt's life. Alrighty. Well, let's continue on again. The AJ Styles promo. I have no idea how the hell I got to this, but I liked it. I thought it was effective. I thought it did what it needed to do, and that's bring the focus back to AJ and build the heat back for AJ. We've already seen Undertaker chokeslam AJ Styles twice, and AJ did a good job of making you want to see it happen a third time. I don't think it'll happen until WrestleMania. Undertaker's gotten in his share of the offense. And furthermore, Is Undertaker that easily upset by AJ Styles copying his moves? I mean, up until last night, it was just that AJ Styles was imitating Undertaker, and you know, he was going to use his tombstone. He, you know, is just mimicking his moveset. Is that really enough? To me, it would be imitation being the sincerest form of flattery. I mean, that's the road I would take. It just doesn't feel, up until last night, it didn't feel like it had anything to it. It had nothing to it. It was just kind of, well, you know, they happen to be fighting, so looks like Undertaker has found his guy for WrestleMania, and it just didn't have anything. And it still doesn't have a whole lot, but at least they, after destroying the building, have rebuilt the foundation. And now it's just kind of level by level, let's build this back up over the next three and a half weeks and get us to care more about why we want to see Undertaker beat up AJ Styles. I mean, he attacked his wife, saying that she's basically a gold digger, and that Undertaker is this subservient troll to Michelle McCool. And so you could say it's gotten very, very personal, and it has. So again, they did a good job of at least rebuilding a foundation for a program. So I'll give them that. And you know, I'm looking forward to it, I guess. I mean, at this point in Undertaker's career, I look forward to seeing him. I don't look forward to the sometimes scary, underwhelming performances by an absolute legend, the best of all time. I don't even have to say one of. He is the best of all time. It's almost impossible to argue that. You could say Hogan, you could say Rock, you could say Austin. But Undertaker, through his longevity and his brand recognition and his contributions to the business, have outlasted them all. And you could say, well, Goldberg fought in, you know, he competed in four decades, or DDP competed in 50 decades. No. Those guys, number one, Goldberg left in 2004 and didn't come back to WWE until what, 2016, 12 years. So I'm not counting guys like that. I'm counting guys that have been constant mainstay faces of the company. And Undertaker is the best of them all. I mean, I don't think anyone would disagree with at least saying he's one of, right? Okay. So I'm going to take a break from the Raw analysis, and I'm going to get it in a quick segment here where you guys get to send in your questions and do it via an audio file. It doesn't have to be just a text question. I actually encourage the audio files so that other people can hear different voices. I can respond to you in real time, and it's just a more fun way to interact. I mean, it's just plain more fun. So if you want to get on the bandwagon here and you want to join the fun and get your comment, question, rant in, just do so by sending a voice memo or a voice file from your iPhone or Android or whatever the heck you got to realwwepodcast@gmail.com, and I will get you on the show. So in that instance, with that being said, I have Curtis Dublin, who has sent in a question about Wade Barrett. So let's get the question in, and I'll do my best to answer it.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for getting back to me on Twitter, man. I had this idea because I love talking about the era when I was growing up in wrestling. I started watching it in 2007 to 2008 is when I started. And I've seen a lot of people come and go. And wrestling for me back then was so cool. I loved it. And I still do, and I always will. And whenever I see older matches, older promos and stuff on YouTube or the network, I just get that nostalgic feeling, you know? And who I want to talk about this time today, for the first one I want to talk to you about, is Wade Barrett. I know Wade Barrett came on the scene in 2010, I think. It was 2010 or 2011. And I've always liked Wade Barrett. I just thought about him when I was at work today, and I thought, hey, you know what? I'll message Matt to see if it's okay if I can send in voice clips of me talking about older wrestlers from when I was a kid and stuff, you know? But yeah, Wade Barrett, I've always liked him. When he was in the Nexus, I didn't know how I felt about him. But then it's like he was red hot, all ready to go when he debuted with the Nexus on the main roster. And it And to me, it feels like as the years came and came along like that, Wade Barrett started to fall and fall and fall, you know? Like, the core, when he was with the core, it was like a watered-down version of the Nexus, and everybody pretty much knows that. And then he had the Bad News Barrett gimmick, which I didn't mind. It was really good for him because I loved hearing Wade on the mic. And then came the League of Nations, where he didn't say a single thing. It's not, I mean, I could be wrong, but it was like he didn't say a thing whenever he was in that group. And then when they kicked him off, you know, we never saw him again. And he was in the company for 7-8 years. You know, he's a multi-time Intercontinental champion. He should have been at least a 2-time world champion, especially when he was in the Nexus. But, no, that's just who I want to get your thoughts and opinions on today, Matt, of Wade Barrett. So thanks for letting me talk about him a little bit. And I'll get back to you when I have another wrestler in mind. Thanks, Matt.
Hey, Curtis. So thanks for the question and for the reminder about Wade Barrett. I did talk about him a couple of times on this show. I've never done it a full show on him, although he is definitely worthy of it because I'm on the same page as you. I was a big fan of Wade Barrett. I always thought that he never quite got to where he could be. As the leader of the Nexus, he really was Nexus, right? Because when you think about the Nexus, you think of Wade Barrett. I mean, you can also say, oh, Heath Slater was in there, right? You had a couple of others. And yes, even Daniel Bryan to some degree. And we had a new leader of the Nexus, or the new Nexus was CM Punk. But when you think of the original Nexus, it was Wade Barrett. He could talk. He could perform. I think if he was to come back at this point, he could still have a good run. And I was always drawn to Wade Barrett's promos. He was a really good heel talker as part of the Nexus. And I remember his just almost never-ending program with John Cena, which ended up being the demise of the Nexus as he just took them out one by one and ultimately ended up just dispatching of Wade Barrett under a pile of chairs. I remember that. It might have been a TLC pay-per-view, and he pulled the string, and like all the chairs that were part of the props on the show set, came down crashing on Wade Barrett. And that was really the last, that, you know, significant part of his career, because after that, as you mentioned, the core, which we all know what that was, we had Bad News Barrett, which, you know, had it not been for his constant injuries, I think could have taken off in a much bigger way. Wade Barrett had something there. You know, I'm afraid I've got some bad news. Like, he was a magnetic character. He had the look. He had the poise. He had the presence. He had the it factor. And for what one reason or another, and constant injuries, he just couldn't continue his momentum. He couldn't just latch on and really get the rocket ship strapped to him. And it's a shame, because I really do like Wade Barrett. I really think that he could be a real big player if he was ever to somehow return. But, you know, it's interesting, too, because you started watching in 2007, 2008 at a time where that was the very tail end of the Ruthless Aggression era, and you just started into the PG era. So it's interesting that, you know, you didn't get to see the the debut of John Cena, Stone Cold, The Rock, running roughshod. So it's cool to talk to someone that is actually from a more of a modern version of WWE rather than the as we call them, the glory days. And when you talk about nostalgia, most fans today would, that are 30, you know, maybe 30 and older, would probably say the good old days, the golden age, was the 90s. The late 90s and early 2000s, when WWE was, you know, selling out house shows, selling out, you know, every arena around the world, record number of pay-per-view buys, record television ratings. I mean, the television ratings are like 20% of what they were back in the 90s. I mean, it's crazy. And you could say, oh, it's cable cutting. It's, you know. The numbers still, WWE still analyzes the numbers in playbacks and in delayed viewing and on-demand watch, you know, on-demand on-demand viewing, like with Hulu and so forth. So that's not really an excuse, but it's pretty cool that you just started watching wrestling in 2007, which I say just, that's crazy that it's 13 years ago from now. It's making me feel old. But Curtis, thanks so much for the question. And again, guys, you want your question on here, email me, voicemail it to realwwepodcast@gmail.com, and I will answer your question, comment, or just let you rant. And keep it as PG as you can. I don't mind the occasional, you know, cuss words. Whatever you hear me, you know, cuss on this show, you know, like the mild swear words, I don't care about. But just don't go all F-bomb on me. All right. Well, let's continue reviewing Monday Night Raw. And heading down the list here was Becky Lynch's promo. And I thought that was probably the best Becky Lynch has felt and looked in a while, coming off of the Baszler dominating win and in crazy dominating fashion that she did at Elimination Chamber and the Bite and all that stuff. But I also enjoyed that Becky Lynch wasn't coming out trying to be a character, right? She didn't come out with the Thug Life sunglasses. She didn't come out trying to be something she's not. You know, the crowd seemed to be still pretty positive towards her. And Lynch came out. She said she's happy to finally know who she'll be fighting at WrestleMania, as if there was any doubt in this world. And that, you know, after a video package was played, there was a video showing Baszler gloating in an interview, saying there's nobody like her, and that she told Becky, look at me when I'm talking to you. I'm going to take the Raw Women's Championship at WrestleMania, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. You know what? That was very effective. And Shayna Baszler is just a boy. She's got it, doesn't she? I mean, Shayna Baszler, for all of her, all the rumors that were floating around that Vince isn't happy with her, you got to be careful of those reports, because who else are they going to? You know, when you see something like that, you would say, well, who the hell are they going to? Who is WWE going to face Becky Lynch at WrestleMania, right? Bring in Ronda Rousey. All year you build all these other women and you go back to the well with Ronda Rousey. Although I would still like a one-on-one with Ronda and Becky, which we never got. So I don't know if Ronda Rousey being at WWE headquarters over the last week and a half, well, within the last week and a half, she hasn't been there for a week and a half, has any validation or merit to the thought that maybe she could be sooner than later coming back to WWE. I would assume, and I would hope, it would be the Monday Night Raw after, and let the women, you know, put a bow on this season of WWE. Let the people who have been here finish up their programs instead of the big distraction of Ronda Rousey coming back. Rumor has it also that Nia Jax has been cleared to return. So look out. I don't know if she's going to be imported into Raw or SmackDown. I'm going to have to look. I don't know if she was drafted at all. So I'm going to have to take a look to see where she could probably fit. Certainly the SmackDown women's roster needs help. And again, I still would position her as a heel. I don't know if they'll do that. They've certainly used her as both. And I think Nia Jax is just born to be a heel. She was so much more comfortable as a heel, being the big obnoxious bully. So hopefully they bring her back in that capacity. But rumor has it that she's cleared to return. So I like this. Again, Lynch continued talking about the longest run that any combined NXT run that any woman had was Shayna Baszler holding the NXT Women's Championship. And said, she told her, I might be a B, but I'm the B that runs this division. And that Baszler is a constipated robot from NXT. That's an interesting take. And so, again, I don't know if she's trying to be funny. She talked about Ronda Rousey, though. She said, your little friend Ronda Rousey had a broken hand at last year's WrestleMania. And that Baszler isn't just looking for a fight or looking for a title. Baszler is looking to rewrite history. And says Lynch says that she believes Baszler's underestimating her. And at WrestleMania, it's going to be heart against skill. And she's going to smash Baszler's face in for it. So a solid promo from Becky. Certainly her best that she's had in months without all the pop and circumstance around her. Just crazy outfits and attention-grabbing stuff that she tries to do that doesn't feel real. And it feels, honestly, just arrogance, which is not, you know, becoming of a babyface champion. So, interesting. And I liked how Baszler wasn't there. I like there's no physicality. I am a big slow burn. Let it just build and build and build, and then we can finally blow it off at WrestleMania. That is the belief that I have. And certainly WWE, to some capacity, is in concert with that. All right, then we have a Rey Mysterio Angel Garza with Zelina Vega, and this match lasted a lot longer than I thought it would. I'll be honest. Rey Mysterio won this match, and it was a bit disappointing Rey won, because I think Angel Garza, who I've sung the praises of and my co-host Ashley sung the praises of, certainly needs a win. Mysterio is no slouch, but it's about the future, and a very solid match, very good match, certainly. And he hit the 619 and then drops the dime and it was over. So Rey Mysterio ends up winning that again. I think in some way, these men, Rey Mysterio, Humberto Carrillo, Angel Garza, and Andrade are all going to be involved in some kind of fatal four-way. I mean, I just don't see another way around it, or a tag team match. But I would say a fatal four-way, considering that it's the United States Championship on the line. It's not a tag team title. So, alrighty. We got footage, too, of AOP and Murphy attacking Kevin Owens backstage as he arrived in the arena. And Owens was laid out. And then as we come back, we were met with the advertisement that Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to return for 316 Day in Pittsburgh. How many times is the King going to say, "Oh, I see what you did there"? He pulled that at Elimination Chamber. It's, the King, for as much as I loved him in the Attitude Era, and I love going back and listening to him and JR, he is not even close to the same person. He's occasionally got his, you know, funny one-liners, and, you know, like, I don't know who he was talking about this past Monday, but he said, if they get any dumber, you know, you're going to have to go out and water them twice a week or something like that. I mean, that was kind of funny. Like, he's got his one-liners that have their moments. But in general, Jerry Lawler, as produced, not the man, but the produced Jerry Lawler, is a complete idiot. And I'm saying that word very nicely. I mean, you know the actual word I'm thinking of. He's just a dumb, you know what. Like, he talks about, how many times did he say this past week on Raw that I'm not easily impressed, but so-and-so is impressing me? What? On a weekly basis, Jerry, you talk about in every match how everyone's so impressive that I can't believe they kicked out. Even in a non-finish maneuver, right? You're just so impressed by everything because your job is to put wrestlers over. Your job is to get them over. So you're telling me that you're not impressed. You're not easily impressed, but no, you are extremely easy to impress. You're probably in one of the easiest produced positions to show that you're impressed in the company. That's your job, is to be impressed. So a small thing, but he said it like 3 or 4 times. Jerry, get a grip. And yeah, oh, haha, wink, wink, I see what you did with 316 Day. Austin 316 and March 16th. Oh, that's just, that's clever. Yeah, Jerry, they mentioned it like 3 times. And if you're the part of the company and you don't know that Austin is going to be on Raw next Monday night, and you don't understand immediately the correlation between 316 Day and March 16th and Austin 316, then maybe you shouldn't be in the announce booth. I mean, the produced version of this Jerry Lawler is just unbearable sometimes. For all of his quick wits and his funny one-liners and Kingisms, all of that is erased so quickly with his just dumb banter and unbelievable a commentary about how everyone's so impressive. You can't believe they kicked out of that. I mean, somebody will just do a simple, like, you know, suplex or a, maybe a superplex, and he'll be shocked that they kicked out. Jerry, you've been with wrestling for 40 years. You know how this works. If you're not getting any smarter, it's almost as if it's Jerry Lawler's first day on the job every single Monday night. That he just comes on and is just so shocked and surprised that everyone is just so tough that they're kicking out of these spectacular maneuvers. I don't know. Maybe I'm going on a rant that I shouldn't go on. But Jerry, smarten up the production of your character, at least on air, for God's sakes. I mean, Jim Ross, of course, is a different animal with you. You guys have a different chemistry. I understand all that. I don't know who's telling you to be produced the way you are. Maybe it's nobody. Maybe you're doing it on your own. I don't care who's doing it or who's responsible. The fact is, fix it. Or just leave the announce booth. I don't want three guys anyway. And that's a shame to say about Jerry the King Lawler. But whoever is producing him this way needs to think twice. All right. So the Rhea Ripley, Charlotte Flair confrontation was effective. I like how Rhea Ripley was shown at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa about how she's looking at the empty seats and how she, you know, everyone compared her to Charlotte Flair with her haircut. So she did everything she could to differentiate herself from Charlotte. All of that was good. It humanized Rhea Ripley. It got you to understand and know who she is. If you've never seen her before and you didn't follow NXT, you immediately can kind of understand as a human being what she's about, who she is, what her mission is, what her feelings are. All of that's extremely important when you're trying to emotionally invest yourself into a WrestleMania match, or any match for that matter. So Charlotte came out and had her kind of weird inflections in her promos. And Charlotte, I don't know, guys, I'm on a tear today. Charlotte is extremely talented. Let me just start by saying that. Charlotte, I think, is ultra talented. I don't think anyone would disagree. But she's got a weird promo delivery, doesn't she? She just goes high when she should go low, or goes low when she should go high, or goes and changes pitch when she should not change pitch at all. Her delivery and cadence is what she has to get through. It's not necessarily her content. It's all about bowing to the queen. Every promo has to end with bowing to the queen, right? Just as right, everything with Baron Corbin has to end with bowing to the king. We got kings, we got queens, we got princesses, we've got empresses. I mean, God, WWE loves their cute little stupid nicknames, don't they? All right, I'm sorry, guys. I'm not in a bad mood. I'm just in like a attack mode. I don't know why. Maybe it's like, I don't know. Maybe the warm weather up here has got me in like, I don't know, my adrenaline going or something. So, Rhea Ripley says she wants to be nothing like Flair, and Flair says there's only one of her. Well, yeah, Flair, or Charlotte, she just said she didn't want to be like you, so I wouldn't worry about there being just one of you. So, Flair says that she will teach Rhea Ripley a lesson. It's one thing to stand in an empty stadium talking about your hopes and dreams. It's another to be in a stadium full of 90,000 people and be humbled by the queen. She does her woo thing, and Rhea Ripley makes her way down to the ramp, and she ends up just punching Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley ends up punching Flair in the face, which she sat there and just was shocked by. And basically, you know, she sits there like a child. And first of all, let me just say, this segment was effective. It moved the program forward. I think it did what it needed to do. It further built this story. Again, we got to learn who Rhea Ripley was. But as far as the selling goes, if someone punches you in the mouth, and that's how it was sold, and she, you know, gets punched hard enough to knock her on her backside, wouldn't you be holding your face instead of just sitting there as if you just slipped on a banana peel? I mean, this is just a microcosm of the lack of selling in wrestling in general. But if someone punched you in the face, you can't tell me you wouldn't be, you know, holding your mouth. And she occasionally tapped her cheek to see if there's blood, but you wouldn't just be sitting there. I can guarantee you that. I don't care who you are. You wouldn't just be sitting there. And the other thing I tweeted out today was, which follow me at the WWE podcast on Twitter, is there some kind of quota in pro wrestling that that needs to be met on a weekly basis of how many suicide dives and super kicks there needs to be. And this is not just exclusive to WWE style of wrestling. I mean, somebody brought up a good point. I mean, this is not just WWE. This is AEW who's guilty of this too. How many super kicks and suicide dives do we need to see? Why? A super kick to me is a finish. It's not a transition move. Like the DDT became a transition move. It is a finish. If someone kicks you in the jaw, underneath the jaw, and kicks you as hard as they can with their leg, you will be knocked out. Right? So, I don't know. All right, let's move on here, because I'm in some kind of mood. And that goes for suicide dives. I don't need to see... I mean, the thing is, too, you see people, guys in the ring, that have no business doing them, and they do them because they can, like Eric and Ivar of the Viking Raiders, doing cartwheels, doing flips. Why? Oh, well, that differentiates them. They're big men. They're not used to be doing that. How about you just differentiate yourself by not being like that and just be the big man you are and placate to that, right? Why not do that? The style of wrestling now, every match feels the same in terms of style. And you could say, well, they're all trained at the same facility, and that's probably part of the problem. Because no one feels different. Everyone's got to have a suicide dive in their arsenal of offense. Why? Why do we have to have that? I don't know. It's just in every single match. I'm serious. Okay. I told you, I don't know. I'm just in some kind of mood today. So the main event here, we had Seth Rollins and Aleister Black, which was good. I mean, it didn't last, what, but 10 minutes before we had Murphy end up being really just another conduit to create a multi-person match, which ended with an 8-man tag match. And, you know, I feel like we've seen this before, and I feel kind of neutral about it. You know, it's nice seeing Aleister Black in some kind of main event capacity. That's nice. So Aleister Black won the first part of this by DQ, and then we get at an 8-man tag match that it was a Teddy Long special, which was good. It was good. The winners here were Seth Rollins, Murphy, Akam, and Rezar, after they landed a stomp to Ford for the cover. So Seth is certainly getting his heat back after losing the belts and then losing the rematch, and then Kevin Owens getting two consecutive stunners on him. It's time to build the heat back, and I'm all for it. But as Rollins was celebrating his victory, Kevin Owens comes from out of nowhere and drags Rollins out of the ring and hit a stunner on Murphy inside the ring. And then Rollins swooped in to make the save of the low blow, and then looked disgusted as he made his way back to his feet, landing a stomp on Kevin Owens. So Rollins stomps Murphy from entering in for the assist, and Rollins lands a second stomp. So it was good. Rollins also hit a third, and this was honestly as hard as it was to watch the heat get blown off of Seth Rollins, he got a good amount of it back this past Monday with what he did to KO. So I'm looking forward to this. I would assume that next week, this should be an official match between Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. I would assume something will be on the line. Maybe, right? I hope. Alrighty. Moving on here to, I know I'm a little bit out of order, but the Kabuki Warriors doing their in-ring screaming, and you get bits and pieces of what they say. Eventually you heard the words Alexa Bliss. I think we all know where we're going with this, with Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross challenging the Kabuki Warriors for the Women's Tag Team Championships. You know, the forgotten belts in WWE, they still have them. So that's easily where they're going. The screaming was just... it was too much. It wasn't heat getting. It was just channel changing. Okay. It went on too long. We also got the Kabuki Warriors versus an Italian Liv Morgan. That's what the promo led into. and the Kabuki Warriors won, as they should. If they're going to be defending those championships, they need to get themselves in a position to feel or be in as strong of a position as they can going into WrestleMania, as Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott and Sarah Logan continue to just fight with one another, of which exactly zero people care. I mean, just nobody cares, and it's a shame. Interesting match here with Eric Rowan and Drew McIntyre. Boy, this would have felt so much bigger earlier in the year, wouldn't it? I mean, the fall from grace Eric Rowan has had, from being the assailant on Roman Reigns and being the monster and the heavy for Daniel Bryan as he was WWE champion. Remember that? And he was, you know, being the intellectual scholar. Remember all that? Well, I even remember a time when Eric Rowan was supposedly super smart and he solved the Rubik's Cube in like 10 seconds or something. Anybody remember that too? Yeah, I do. I don't think they know what the hell to do with him. So Drew McIntyre comes out and makes really quick work of Eric Rowan, as you know, Aleister Black defeated him too. I mean, Eric Rowan's being defined down quickly. His stock is sinking quick. Drew McIntyre is really what the focus is here. And so he beats Eric Rowan pretty handily, but interestingly enough, he even took the steel steps and crushed the cage that Eric Rowan was bringing around. So, and what's weird is too, the announcers even acted like they didn't know what was in the cage. We saw what was in the cage last week. So I don't know. But I would assume that cage gimmick is dead, gone, and buried. I would assume that's the signal here, of which I'm fine with. But McIntyre gets the three count for the win. I liked it. I also liked the Paul Heyman and Drew McIntyre type of video promo they did, with showing Brock Lesnar beating everybody. It's interesting too that Paul Heyman said, "Oh, he ran through Stone Cold Steve Austin." No, he didn't. They showed him F5-ing Stone Cold, which was the Monday Night Raw before WrestleMania 20. The SmackDown following, Austin came back to get his ATV, hit a stunner on Heyman, and beat the hell out of Brock Lesnar. And then they subsequently, Austin stunned Brock Lesnar right out of a WWE ring, as Jim Ross famously said, at WrestleMania 20. So, yeah, just a little bit of a disclaimer and asterisk there. So, overall, again, I thought it was a good Raw. I had too high of expectations for Edge and Randy Orton, and maybe it's just personal preference of how I would book these guys, but at least that's just how I view things, and that's what this podcast is all about, is authentic analysis. It's not your big podcast type of state-run radio like Corey Graves has, where it's an interview, but not really, right? It's an interview, but it's state-run radio, so, well, I don't know. You guys know how I feel about that. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me. This has been a blast to review Monday Night Raw. Things are going to get heated up even more and more as we get closer to WrestleMania. I went on several rants tonight. I don't know what got into me. I'm not apologizing. God, no. It's just the way it was. But I appreciate you guys listening, subscribing, all of that, all those good things. And you guys are the reason that this is here. And so thank you so much. Don't forget, tomorrow will be a Wrestling Nostalgia Vault. It will not be a brand new one. I'm taking the day off from recording tomorrow, at least in a live format. I might do a quick introduction, but the actual content of the Wrestling Nostalgia is going to be from the Vault. And then Thursday, Friday's AEW, NXT. And then on Sunday is going to be your Week in Review with Anthony DeMarco. So very, very interested to hear what his opinions are over the last few weeks, since we haven't been, we only talk every 3 weeks, as my rotating schedule is on a 3 week time frame. So, all right, well, that is all for you guys. As always, thank you so much for listening. And yep, I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app, so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWEpodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.